Hello, and welcome to Friends for Life, a podcast of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's National Mission. We're here to come alongside you as we journey through life under the cross. What does it look like to care for our neighbors in body and soul? How do we tend to our own body and soul? How can we speak up for life? And finally, how do we share the faith with the next generation? Join us as we have these conversations and learn together. We hope you'll stick around and be our friends for life.
Thanks so much for joining us. I'm your host, Steph Neugebauer, here with my guest and friend, Juliana Schultz. Juliana, can you introduce yourself and maybe explain a little bit about what you do in the Office of National Mission and then how youth ministry equips youth in our church to serve in their own mission fields?
Absolutely. So I am a director of Christian education by training, and my current call is to the youth ministry part of the Office of National Mission. And there I serve as the program manager for resources and leadership. So that includes everything from our resource website to our research and other resources that we provide for congregations as they do youth ministry for districts as well. And then I help run Youth Lead, which is our teen leadership program that helps equip young leaders for their church and community. And then I help at the LCMS Youth Gathering.
Big one.
My role is to focus on supporting all of our adult leaders who come to the gathering, but certainly that gathering is a big part of what our office does. So we do all sorts of ways of equipping, and you kind of hear about them. So leadership development, we do servant events, we have a resource website, other resources that we provide, like our seven practices of healthy youth ministry, and then the LCMS Youth Gathering. And then we have a podcast called End Goals.
Oh, and you have a podcast. So, that's what the cool kids are doing these days.
All of them, yeah.
Awesome. Well, it's fun to have you on, and it's fun to be able to interview you. I bet it's a little weird being on that end of things, though.
Yeah, I'm used to having the questions, not the answers. So we'll see how I do on that part.
I think you're going to be great. But I do want to make the statement that before we move forward, neither Juliana or myself are licensed counselors or therapists. Our discussion that we're having today is merely from the perspective of church workers who care for our neighbors. All right, so Juliana, this season is all about mental health, specifically how Christians approach mental health and then view mental wholeness. I know we're painting with a broad brush here when we answer this, but what's the state of mental health in our young people, especially the kind of young people that you work with, the age groups, I should say. So maybe you should clarify what age groups we're talking about when we talk about youth, what generation that is, and what the state of their mental health is.
Yeah, for sure. So primarily working with middle school and high school, kind of leaning into that high school a little more is where my focus is, or our focus in youth ministry. And so that's actually going to be almost entirely at Gen Z right now, with an edge to Gen Alpha. So Gen Alpha is taken into just starting their middle school years, depending on who you ask, right? It's a pretty new line, so we're still kind of finagling when Gen Alpha starts. So certainly, you'll hear this a lot. I'm a data-driven person, not anybody who's licensed for mental health work, but certainly can look at that data and say a couple of things about what's true for those generations. I think one of them, we know anecdotally, that those generations are much more open about that conversation with mental health. They have a lot more language than we did, than previous generations did, about what mental health is or could be, diagnoses that you might see frequently, that they are much more willing to talk openly about where their struggles are, and they're much more likely than previous generations to reach out for help. And so those are all really positive things. I think the mixed bag kind of comes in here when we say, like, but we also know that Gen Z is the least likely to report very good or excellent mental health, right? And we are seeing a push now to really be concerned about the rising rates of suicide in young people. The CDC has been kind of ringing that bell for a while, which tells us that with that rise in suicide rates, it's not just a rise in diagnoses that we're seeing, right? But that actually we're seeing young people struggling to the point of really life-ending kind of things. So we also know that they are definitely, like, research will say they're the most stressed generation, which as an adult I have a hard time believing, but like, we'll talk, maybe break that down a little more, but they are, they report higher stress levels and higher stress levels about more things than other generations are. And then I just saw a recent study that said about 73% of Gen Z reports feeling either sometimes or always alone.
Wow.
Which I think plays into that. So we're having more conversations about it. We're reaching out for help more, which is really great. But also, I think we still see a lot of struggles for our young people in those ways.
Yeah. I mean, you've touched on this, and this was going to be a follow-up question. I'm just thinking, and I'm one person with one background, but I'm just thinking of, say, my grandparents and their generation would have never heard them talk about even the concept of mental health or being open about any kind of feelings of loneliness or anxiousness. Not that they weren't present, but those certainly weren't talked about. And I'm not even sure as readily thought about, certainly not, you know, coming up in conversations, news articles, statistics, really. And now it seems like World Health Organization has kind of zeroed in on the fact that just not even nationwide, but globally, the rise in mental illness in our young people, it's increased quite a bit. So what do you think are the factors to that? I don't know, maybe you would say, yeah, my grandparents were the same way, or maybe you have a different experience.
I think what's interesting is if you go back in the literature, they did not talk about mental health, but they would reference things that maybe we didn't fully understand because science couldn't tell us about the chemistry of our brains yet. You know, people who came back, for example, from World War II and really struggled with what we would now call PTSD, but we didn't have a term for that. You see it. It's, you can see streaks of mental health back then, right? But we didn't really have terms for it. We didn't, you know, that the idea of counseling or going to counseling or what that looks like or even the science of how we understand how our brains work was in such an infancy that, like, no, we didn't really have the language that we have now. Now we can say, like, oh, well, this is a diagnosis, the DSM-5, right? Like, that's a much more common vernacular. And that helps us to have that conversation versus, and I do think there was a ton of shame attached to it for a long, long time, right? Shame and judgment that when I struggled with mental health, that was indicative of maybe sin. Maybe it was, the church certainly played into that a little bit, or that just culturally, that meant I was doing something wrong, and that was something shameful that I shouldn't talk about, which I think we see that transition now. Now, I will say that's true for a lot of diagnoses like depression and anxiety, but there's still a lot of shame and quiet, you know, because I don't want to talk too much about maybe more extreme mental health diagnoses like schizophrenia. There's still a lot of, there's a lot more difficult language that we still have to work out on pieces like that.
Juliana, I'm so anxious to hear your answer and your thoughts on this. What factors do you think have influenced the mental health of our youth? Well, we could say maybe in a positive way, but also negatively. Like, what has driven, you think, the higher suicide rates, the higher levels of loneliness reported?
Yeah. I don't think you're going to get away from talking about technology. So maybe we talk about it first, right? I think there is a clear set of data that says with the rise of technology came the rise of some increased mental health struggles. So I don't think that's not just for this generation. That's not just for young people, right? That's, we don't want to just say like, oh, that's just true for teenagers. Like, I think we all struggle with our mental health a little because we are tied to different kinds of technology. And that's not always good for us, right? So I do think you have to start there, which is, you know, we can see in a lot of the research that says that particularly girls who are heavy users of social media are 3 times more likely to be depressed than non-users, right? For boys, it's twice as likely if they're heavy social media users, right? And we know that most teenagers are heavy social media users. So I think there is a rising concern that we need to be thinking very critically about when we give teenagers technology in their hands is phones, or when we give them screens, how long we give those screens. I love there's research that says up to 10 hours a week, social media has a really positive influence on your connection to people. You're feeling connected to the world and your community and with the people that you love. And then after 10 hours a week, it dips precipitously. So you're like, okay, well, we can see where it's helpful and where it starts to become a problem, those kinds of things. And so I think that's an easy thing to blame, but I don't think it's the whole story either, right? So social media certainly plays a role in it, but technology has changed things like sleep.
Yeah.
Right. If I don't have my phone away, I'm not getting a full night's sleep. If I don't have a full night's sleep, that impacts my mental health. So sometimes we correlate things that aren't necessarily exactly together. Right. So, yeah, it's probably not good that you're scrolling Instagram at 2 a.m, not just because Instagram's maybe problematic, but because you're not sleeping, 14-year-old. Yeah. Right. So well, your body's trying to develop. So things like that come alongside of that. Online bullying. Bullying's always been a problem and been a part of mental health. But now if you're bullied, it doesn't just stay at school. It doesn't just stay on your sports team. It follows you home and it's in your hand all the time. Right? So the question then is, that's not the technology that's the problem. It's the bullying that's the problem. So again, we don't want to just drop everything on the access to information and social media either. I do think we saw in the pandemic a slowdown of that social emotional growth that we saw in all ages, for littles to through college students. That was a huge hit to them in terms of having the kind of time with each other to develop social emotional skills and regulation. And that we're going to see the impact of that into the future a little bit. But the thing I have been struggling with most and like how we address this is that we seem to have gotten ourselves culturally into a point where we expose young people to high levels of information and we do give them a slowdown of their experiences. So maybe kind of explain this way. Like, I give you a phone when you're 14. Now you have all of the information of the whole world in your hand. And you can know everything about war that's going on across the globe. And you can see all of the struggle and sin and brokenness in our world, both worldwide and in my community and with my friends. And all of those things all together. So I have all of this information that I have access to. And at the same time, we're seeing young people who are choosing to postpone driving, postpone getting jobs, postpone romantic relationships. In some ways, we're excited. We're seeing a drop in alcohol and drug use, but it's not that they're not ever getting there, but they're waiting further and further into their lives to get to that point. So they might not experiment with those things, let me be clear. I do not want people drinking or taking drugs, but like they're not looking for that experience in their teen years. And so you have this huge amount of information and you have no experience to hang it on. So you have no context. And so everything feels like it's falling apart. And I have nothing in my experience to tell me otherwise. Now, as adults, we can handle that because we've lived through life and we've seen things come and go. And we have places in our mature brains that help us to contextualize the information and what's really dangerous and what I need to care about. We've tried some things. We failed. We've gotten back up again. We've tried jobs. Maybe they've been good. Maybe they've been bad. But I know I can survive both of those things. Teenagers don't have that. They don't have that experience in which to kind of contextualize this huge amount of information that they're asked to process.
Hmm. I honestly have never heard it explained in that way or that well. So I appreciate you even bringing that perspective to us. It almost sounds like with the increase of information, with technology literally at our fingertips, the world that is full of risks is made widely known, which may perhaps lead to some aversion for any kind of behavior that would have any kind of risk, whether that's learning to drive or going out and getting a job at, you know, 15 when you're by yourself without your friend groups, stuff like that. So I can see how that's just changed how teens interact with the world.
Yeah. And it's easy then to go like, yeah, I would be anxious and depressed too if all I heard was all of the terrible things in the world and I had no context in which to say like, or I'm struggling with my identity and I don't know who I am, but I see all of this around me, or I'm trying to figure out my place in this world and everything kind of looks terrible and I'm just not really sure about anything and I have no experience to hang that stuff on. So when we say like they're a stressed generation, when we look at the things that they're stressed about, it's everything. That's why they're the highest levels of stress, is because there's nothing that they're not stressed about. They're stressed about gun violence and world violence and politics and and I'm like, well, yeah, no wonder you're anxious, right? I get that information. And as an adult, I know that there's things that I care about. There's things that I can do. But also I know what I have control over and what I don't have control over. I have an ability to kind of process that information well and come out with what I need to be doing actively. They don't. They just get that information and just kind of sits there for them. So I think part of that is having adults and parents around them to say like, okay, well, let's talk about those things. Let me externally process that for you so that you understand what we can do and what we can't do and what we pray about and what we go to scripture about. How do we take our faith and how does that help us understand sin and this brokenness in this world? And what is our responsibility as baptized children of God to be out there? And like, as we do those things, I think helps them gain skills that help them keep healthy mental wholeness rather than drop into that struggle.
I was just going to say, really, the burden lies on the adults to help these, you know, incoming generations of young folks to be able to handle this new amount of information in a responsible way, to pause, to reflect, to consider, to work through. And so how can adults help you through this growing up? How can adults help young people strive toward mental wellness rather than anxiousness or loneliness? What do we need to be doing?
I think as Christians, the first thing I do is like, let's model for them well what that looks like in our own lives. That we're consistently in worship, that we're consistently in scripture, that we pray, that they see us doing that and us talking about that as a way that we help our spiritual lives, but also our mental health as well, right? That we are modeling that for them. So they're like, these are good things for us because God gave them to us because they help us to understand, contextualize, process difficult things. Right? I know I have a God who's bigger than all of the brokenness in this world. I know I am a chosen and loved child of God through my baptism. Those things help me navigate through all of that information, right? Because those things are always going to be true. So being able to model that for them, I think I call it maybe loaning our experiences to them. And you got to be careful. Like, I don't want to loan all my experiences to them, right? Like, there's some stuff they don't need to know about. But as much as I can say, like, I want to validate that feeling that you're having right now, but also I want to tell you that this is my experience, is that feeling doesn't last forever. So like, how do we help you think about this, process this, get to the other side of this? Because there is another side of this. You think about, everybody can think back and think of their first heartbreak. And you did that first heartbreak on whether you lost a really good friend or it was a romantic relationship and you were like, the world is over. It's all over and nothing will ever be okay again, right? And then you got to the other side of that and you were like, oh, okay, that is a thing that I can overcome. The second time it happened, it did not feel quite as much like the world was ending, right? And the next time, and the next time. So being able to learn that to say, like, okay, yes, it does feel that way. Feel all the feelings that you need to feel. But also, let me loan you that experience to say, like, there's another side to this. It's going to be okay. So how do we get you there, right? Like, what does that look like? So being able to have adults who are able to kind of, I mean, teenagers don't have a fully developed frontal lobe yet. So we're just letting them borrow ours for a minute to say, like, okay, this will be okay. Stick with me. And, like, I don't want to invalidate how you feel about that, because you're feeling that it's always going to feel that bad, maybe, right? It's maybe not always going to feel that bad. Your first time you get your heart broken is always going to feel bad, right? But, like, okay, there's a future to that. So I think adults can help give that information if we're really strategic about it, that helps them to, again, learn to process and do that in a healthy way.
So what about, this is especially helpful for parents, what you just offered, but what about other adults in their lives? What's the role of other adults in teens' lives as opposed to simply their parents helping them through? Like, is there a positive to be had with other adults coming in and being in that young person's life? And then how is that support magnified when it's within a church context, when it's someone from your church, whether it's a youth leader or a pastor or just another adult who shows interest and care for you?
Yeah, we can see huge benefits in the health of young people who have adults around them who are not a part of their family, but who care for them well, right? And so when we talk about 7 practices of healthy youth ministry, we'll use that language. We talk about having supportive adults. And one of the things we say is that every young person should have 5 Christian adults around them who care for them. 5's not a perfect number, but it's the best number we have, right? It's Fuller Youth Institute used it for Sticky Faith. They found that in their research. And we saw similar numbers kind of in our research as well. So that's kind of the number we go with. And so we're looking to have 5 supportive adults. And these are people who are genuinely interested in that young person. They're investing time in getting to know them, investing time in being hospitable and warm to them. So making sure they have time for them, that they get to know them a little bit, know what's happening in their lives, and that they're building that mutual back and forth respect and honesty that allows a young person, when they struggle, to say, like, okay, that's a person I can talk to. I have a question. I can ask that question to my pastor. I can ask that question to my youth leader. I can ask that question to Jane, the grandma who sits next to us at church every Sunday, because she knows me and I trust her, and she's a caring individual that I know, if I ask her, it's a safe person that I can do. I love that when we did our retention study, we saw that young people who had at least one person in their church that was a safe person to talk to had a much better level of retention in the church overall than those that didn't, right? So it's healthy for mental health. It's healthy for the church. Everybody gets to be a part of that. And it doesn't take a lot, right? It's making sure you know somebody's name, using it, asking them questions, finding teenagers are not scary. I promise. Adults can go in and be like, "Hey, tell me about you. Like, what are you passionate about? What are you interested in? Can we find some common ground? Whether it's a sports team that we both love, or a television show, or an interest in frisbee golf. I don't know what it is, but, like, you can find those commonalities, and that can be a great place for you to do that. And that allows that young person, then, if there's a topic maybe they don't want to talk to their mom and dad about, that they have another person that can be there, that will walk with them, that will walk through good things and bad things. They're going to celebrate them. They're going to be there in times of transition and crisis. But that all of that is going to be a space where that adult can have a really powerful impact. And what I love about that is that statistically we look at it, and that young person only needs to know that they can talk to that adult if they have a hard time. They don't actually need to have a conversation with them, right? The benefit comes in knowing they have that person even before they have a hard conversation with them. Huh. Right? So you're like, I don't know. I know all the kids in my church. They don't really talk to me about that. Yeah, but you just knowing them has a benefit, even before they have to walk through hard things with you. So something to keep in mind.
Yeah, the power of relationship, just what it does.
Which is not, we know that, right? We've heard that before.
Yeah, well, this sounds a little deja vu because you and I did a recording with Mark Kiesling about this very thing, that how can adults rally around youth, support them, and identify them as future leaders in the church. So if you want to go listen to that, go back in the indexes of Friends for Life and find that episode. But this is some really good stuff. I want to know how the church specifically can equip parents, other adults, and even youth. What can the church do? Because certainly there's a connection between spiritual well-being and mental well-being.
Yeah. I think one thing to remind ourselves, and hopefully you're hearing this from multiple people and not just me, that having a strong faith, having our faith, is not going to always eliminate mental health struggles, right? Yes. Even faithful Christians are going to struggle with their mental health at some point. Just like we're struggle with our physical health at some point, mental health is going to struggle even with faithful Christians who are firmly in our church communities, right? So being able to talk about that, right? Fostering open conversations about where people might be struggling. And we call it warmth, challenge, and grace, but this environment where it's okay to talk about those kinds of things and that we're open, that we recognize that it's not an if, but a when, right? When people are going to struggle in mental health, and we have resources for that. I think for youth leaders, we always strongly suggest that they kind of understand kind of what the rules are for their location, but often it can be really helpful for them to call ahead of time to mental health practitioners in their area and know who they can refer their young people to. So is there a faithful Lutheran counselor in your area? What are their expertise? If somebody is a licensed mental health therapist, counselor, psychiatrist, all those people, you can reach out and say like, hey, what are your expertise? Like, what are you interested in? I work for a church. I work with young people. I want to be able to reference you to them. Should I have that? So having that in your back pocket is really helpful. There are some places where you need to actually make multiple recommendations. You can't just make one, but for the most part, being able to have that, I think being able to talk about how our spiritual health is sometimes a great barometer of our mental health with our young people, to say like, yeah, if you're really struggling to pray, you're really backing away from our community. If you're, you know, we see that in you, you're not wanting to be in Bible study. Like, is that what's going on there? And it might be a crisis of faith, but it also might be a mental health thing that we can help step into, and using kind of those practices and where we see that fluctuating as maybe an indicator of maybe somebody struggling with their mental health as well. And being okay to answer that question with them and talk with them about that. I think you mentioned parents, and I think that's another big one, is that we want to support parents. When your young person is struggling with their mental health, that can be really difficult for parents to walk through with that with their young person. They love their teenager. They really want them to be healthy and whole. And it's easy to care for a parent when a young person's got a physical illness. It's harder when there's a mental illness involved, or where there's a mental health crisis. So being able to walk with that parent through the guilt that they might feel around that, or even the shame they might feel around that, and be able to say like, yeah, we're here for you. We want to support you. How can we walk with you and your family? I know I've experienced this with parents who maybe their child has a suicide attempt, and they just don't know who to talk to, and they feel just like this is their fault, that it's all on them, and they're not sure what to do. And we want the church to be a place that can rally around that young person and their parents, and not just leave them in that situation where they feel like they have to handle it all on their own and never talk about it. So being able to care for parents in those situations, again, having older adults who walked through that, to like, I will loan you my experience here about like how that can work and how we can come out the other end of that.
What are some of your top tips, Juliana, for youth specifically when it comes to caring for their own mental health?
I think for teenagers to be able to to find the people around them that they can talk to know that they have the people around them. And we've talked about that a lot. I think one of the things that we can do is to find firm places to hold your identity, right? Mm-hmm. To be reminded. And whether that's spending time in God's word and prayer regularly, that's being together with other people in scripture and in worship to be able to know my identity first comes as a baptized child of God. Find a way to remind yourself. Put it, it's on a post-it. It's on this, the lock screen of your phone, whatever you need to be able to hold on to that, because there's so many other messaging that you're going to get. And holding on to that messaging can really help deflect a lot of that other messaging that I am a baptized child of God. That's my first and foremost identity. And then finding those adults around you who are going to help care for you, love you, be safe places for you to fall, for you to struggle, for you who are going to celebrate your success and who are going to be a part of that. And then I think being able to recognize when you might be struggling and be able to find places to vocalize that. I think one of the things that we see, or at least I saw in a recent piece, was that most teenagers say that the adults around them don't know how much they're struggling with their mental health, right? So being able to, as a young person, to say, like, I don't like how I'm feeling right now, and I don't know what it is, and I'm not sure. It's okay. We want you to tell an adult around you who can help you to navigate that. And it might be temporary. We might have things that we maybe need to do for a little while to help you find that wholeness again. But reach out as much as you're able to those adults with the honesty about where you are in your mental health, because that does make such a huge difference in being able to get access to the things that will help you find that wholeness again.
All right. So last question, which is kind of a zinger, but I'm just thinking of my own kids who are very young. My oldest is 8. So I have young children. We're not into these years of, I'm assuming I have Gen Alphas. That's probably the generation they are going to be in. So I guess yet to be known what's going to go on with them. But my question is thinking about, especially my oldest, who's very much a feeler and thinker, who has strong emotions, who's very in tune to emotions already. Is there a balance to be struck between, yes, let's talk about your emotions, let's work through these, but also that emotions and feelings aren't everything. So is it possible to overemphasize someone's, now, I'm not talking about, you know, mental illnesses where we're talking about real diagnosable, you know, depression or schizophrenia or any of that, but kind of a general view of, you know, anxious children. Is it possible to overemphasize emotions to the detriment of their resilience, to the detriment of their ability to persevere through them? Does that make sense?
Yeah. It does, right? Because it's, I think that's where we come with, like, hey, we have all of this new language and thought and understanding of our bodies and our emotions and the way that God made us. And so, like, we want to recognize that. We want to celebrate that. We want to figure out how to do that well and in a way that maybe previous generations, and we talked about this a lot earlier, right, that they were like, I'm not allowed to feel feelings. Feelings are not a thing that we're allowed to have, unless they're happy feelings. Right.
But even that, and we're going to temper.
Like, right, yeah. We're not too happy, because that would be a whole thing, right? So, like, I think there is huge value in helping young people of all ages, and even adults sometimes, the value of understanding a wide vocabulary for my emotions. Right, I can feel feelings other than happy and sad. I have a wide vocabulary for my emotions. I know what they do to my body, that I can see them, that I can identify them. Because in doing that, that does help me to go, like, okay, that is a thing, and I'm going to feel it, and then I'm going to figure out my way through it. Right, I'm not going to invalidate it. It's not going to pretend like it's not there. I'm not going to hide it. Right, that has its own ramifications. But I'm going to be clear about what it is I'm feeling and then figure out my way through it. I think it's huge, huge value, right? We can see that when we have a wide emotional vocabulary and a processing skill, that's where we see a lot of mental health, right? What we don't want to do is let teenagers, who we love deeply, particularly, fester in that emotion, right?
Yeah.
Right? Or fail to identify it. They're like, I don't know, I just feel gross. And you're like, okay, that's not help. Like, if we want to get through a feeling, we kind of have to figure out what it is first, what might be causing it, and then we have to get, right? So you can't just not identify it, right? And you also have to figure out through it. You can't just, you don't want to just sit in it, right? So we talked about heartbreak earlier, right? Sometimes it's easy to identify where that came from, right? And I'm going to identify that's a loss. I'm going to talk about grief. I'm going to talk about disappointment. I'm going to talk about maybe where I feel shame, because maybe I did something wrong in that process. We're going to identify, okay, then like, what's the way through that, right? We can be sad for a while. We can sit and have ice cream and listen to sad music and whatever. And then we're going to be process that, right? We don't want to just sit in it, because that's not healthy for us, right? So sometimes adults can help them through that. Sometimes we all get stuck and we need different coping mechanisms. And that's where therapy can be a huge benefit. If it's something big, we can't figure out how to process or cope our way through it, then yeah, maybe we need somebody to help us give some more skills. Therapy's awesome for that. I do think we can sometimes, I think we all have that struggle, but particularly teenagers in the angst and hormones will get stuck in that and not either be able to identify it or have the skills to be able to get through it. And so how do we help them to do that? Well, is that answering your question?
Yeah, it does. It calls to mind in 2 Corinthians when St. Paul writes that we take every thought captive and make it obedient to Christ. And that includes our emotions. So yes, we can feel, we can experience. This can even be our reality and not something we're making up. And yet it's all under the authority of God. And so he has the power to help us through. He gives us the strength to resist temptation. He gives us the strength to persevere. And he tells us that there's more to this life than this just one experience or feeling or emotion. And certainly that's, you know, part of it. But there's also serving neighbor, thinking of others, not only dwelling on what's going on inside of me, but what is life but to honor God and serve neighbor. And so sometimes it's helpful to, at the right time, to pull someone out and to offer a bigger perspective of how, you know, you're part of the body of Christ and we need you. And you have an important role to play that's beyond just this one experience or feeling of loneliness or what have you, but you have a place and a purpose.
Yeah, and how vocation gives us that, right? That purpose, that thing that continues, that we need you for this, right? It's not just, we do need you as a community, but we also need you for a task, right? And that purpose can help us through times where we feel purposeless, where we feel, you know, whether it's depression or whether it's just a general, all sorts of feelings, right? That helps us to navigate through some of those things as well. Yeah, no, that's so true.
So in summary too, we just want to reiterate that if you are a young person listening, if you know a young person who is struggling in their mental health, if you are the parent, your pastor is a great resource to go to, your youth worker in your church, ask them for, you know, referrals. Who do you recommend for my child to see as a, you know, clinical therapist who, you know, is licensed to deal with this particular issue? These are all good things to do and to be in prayer too about, you know, what does God want me to do in this situation, or how can I help my teen through this situation? So thank you so much for offering some really good food for thought for our listeners as we care for our teens as part of our church. Julianne, it was a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks so much for having me and for having these important conversations.
Thanks for joining us. Friends for Life is a podcast that discusses the life God has given and the people he has called you to serve right where you are in God's mission.